Hello and welcome to Radio Free Nintendo. It's October 19th, 2023, and I forgot to mute my TV, but I have now, and I don't think any of it picked up. But if it did, you got to hear a little bit of a Dr. Pepper ad. I'm sorry. I'm James Jones. I'm joined today by Mr. John Lindemann.
It's great to be here, James.
Mr. Guillaume Veillette.
Hello.
Mr. Greg Leahy.
You got to try it to love it. Are they still using that?
No, now they're doing this weird, like, football-obsessed society in a snow globe. They've been doing it for like seven years.
Like to be a pepper too, you know?
They need to have
Brian Bosworth like walking through a group of people singing.
But right now Brian Bosworth is the sheriff in this weird Dr. Pepper football town.
I have seen this campaign once or twice. Yeah.
They've been doing it for 7 years at this point. It's out of control. The same actors. I don't understand.
Brian Bosworth ain't doing anything else.
Well, that's true.
He's still available.
I keep hoping for One Tough Bastard too, but at this point, I've got to accept it's probably not happening.
What if they did One Tough Bastard 2 would be pretty good, but I'm trying to remember what his other movie that we love is.
Stone Cold is the biker one.
What if they did Stone Cold 2, but he's old now, and he's actually chief of police, and he's got to deal with somebody who was like him growing up. I think there's something, who's an NFL player that flamed out recently that's a big dumb meathead that we could cast in that role?
Gronk. We're going to Gronk. Is that?
I wasn't, but you just nailed it one. So congratulations, Gronk is the answer here.
Yeah, he's kind of the meathead progenitor. He's the prototype.
Yeah. So. You know what? Gronk doing Stone Cold would be really funny. I'm going to be honest. That would be... Because, like, you would just look at his dumb, goofy face while he's threatening bikers, and it wouldn't make any sense. The cognitive dissonance would be beautiful. So, yeah, that's what we're going to talk about for episode 845.
Nice, James.
I had to think about it. I had to think about it, to pull it out of my brain.
See, the thing is, I'm proud of you when you do that. You know, I'm cheering. I'm internally cheering for you when you do that.
It's not like I could have looked it up before the show started or anything.
Who does that? Who prepares? I mean, I don't.
All right.
It's part of my genius.
Oh, God. I need to start preparing. Fuck. I need to start preparing. But there's a game that came out today that... today for some of us, that unfortunately, you know, we need to turn to an expert to talk about because not everybody's had the chance to play it. And of course, that game is Halloween Games for Toddlers and Babies.
Sweet.
which did come out today. But no, that game is, I'm going to get the full name right, Super Mario Brothers Wonder, which is way too long of a title. Reviews came out earlier this week. They've been very, very positive. But one of us, due to the magic of time zones, has actually had a chance to play it. So, Greg, tell us what you've been up to with this game so far.
Yeah, just over the past couple of hours, I've been getting as much time in as I could with it. Kind of not going like barreling straight ahead necessarily in terms of just like the kind of critical, seemingly the critical path forward, you know, through the campaign. But because there's a lot of kind of optional levels and paths on the kind of world map available to you. That really is one of the key kind of things so far that stands out is just that it is significantly more freeform than, you know, I think any of the new Super Mario Brothers games, especially this early on, where you even sort of before you've kind of fought your first kind of castle boss, you know, which is always a milestone in any of the side-scrolling Mario games, you can kind of go off and find a bunch of secret levels and, you know, especially with this whole new kind of difficulty rating thing that they've got up front. So it's like, it's very clear, like kind of about, okay, you know, this is off the beaten path, you know, it would seem so just from the map itself, but you know, in case there's any doubt, it's like, okay, yeah, you have wandered into an area with more difficult levels that you can play now if you want. And I like that from the point of view that, you know, especially as many side scrolling platformers in general, as well as just, you know, specifically Mario ones that I've played over the years. You know, the early going can feel a bit like going through the motions because they've got, you know, they have to start it pretty gently, right?
Right. It's the
entire difficulty of the game is not going to be pitched that high, but then, you know, you're always trying to be accessible to, you know, newcomers or for whom it's their first side-scrolling Mario, but let's not forget it's the first, like, truly original side-scrolling Mario game in 11 years. So, you know, it's perfectly plausible there's plenty of children, you know, coming up that have not played one of these before. Of course, in the interim, we've had, you know, the deluxe version of New Super Mario Brothers U on Switch. We've had Super Mario Maker 2. You've had Super Mario Run. Like, yeah, there's plenty of ways that
Luigi counted in that time that you're talking about?
Yeah, Luigi is would have been a bit later than 2012.
Okay,
because it was in the year of Luigi, 2013. But yeah, still, yeah, even then,
that's 10 years. It only makes it 10.
And that was not wholly original. Obviously, it was a remix of the base game for Wii U.
Right.
It was a very nice remix, liked it a lot, but, you know, yeah, it was still that. So, yeah, it has to be gentle at first. There's no getting around that. But the fact that it seems like there's more options to kind of, wander around this overworld map now and find some levels that you can see very clearly are kind of rated as a bit more difficult. Still, anything, you know, crazy hard or anything, but it helps mix things up a bit, and, you know, give you something, a little bit of a challenge to sink your teeth into, earlier than just purely kind of, okay, let's do the first, you know, X number of worlds or, you know, castle bosses until it actually starts to show some teeth. So, but on the other hand, you know, if you don't want to interact with any of those harder levels that are clearly identified, you certainly don't have to. So yeah, that more freeform nature in the overworld is something I like. It seems like it's a sort of evolution of the overworld in, Super Mario 3D World as much as anything, actually, which obviously is a, you know, slightly different branch of the Mario game, being, you know, a successor to the 3D games, but it was also, you know, much more closely related to the 2D games, as one of those. And it had a certain amount of, okay, I'll kind of wander around and fell into different kinds of challenges, as well as, you know, your kind of main levels. Yeah, for instance, like the little Captain Toad challenges that were in it that gave birth to mm-hmm. Captain Toad, the separate game, for instance. But in this case, you've got things like, these badge challenges now that they showed before the game came out, where it's like, okay, it's a little task based on this particular kind of power that a badge confers, like, you know, kind of wall climbing or, like swimming, dashing while swimming and so forth. And then you beat that to, earn the badge. But also all these sorts of, you know, kind of optional levels, other challenges, whatever they might be, they give you the kind of wonder seeds that are sort of analogous to how star coins might have worked in various previous, Mario games, not just the new Super Mario games, where it's like a currency to kind of unlock the further levels in the game. So, like, and then also you get one per exit, essentially, but then you also get one for kind of successfully, like, finding the one that's hidden inside the Wonder Flower sequences. So, obviously, this was a big selling point. This is one of the things that really kind of led with in the marketing, that, you know, the levels have a Wonder Flower to find. Sometimes it's pretty much just throwing it at your feet, going, go on, get on with it, touch it. Other times it is more hidden. And I mean, that's just in these early levels. So I can imagine there's greater variance with that as it goes on. But, you know, if you do find that, then there's the kind of wonder seed at the end of it. So it's almost like getting credit for, it's almost like getting credit for doing a secret exit. When you do that inside a level, it gets you the same kind of reward as finding an exit to a level does. And those, you build up to then kind of pay your way through to the next, like, core set of levels. So that's how they've done it. Like, you know, the actual star coins themselves don't really exist anymore. You just get kind of big purple coins that are worth 10 of these, like, purple currency that you can use to buy stuff at shops, which can themselves be used to buy the Wonder Seeds outright. Right. At least to some degree. I haven't purchased any yet, but they're there. I don't know if you can just keep doing it or if there's like a stock limit on those. And then also like various like little helper items or cosmetic things. Like, yeah, I think, you know, this whole business of like having the cardboard standee thing for the online, in that kind of oblique online interaction that they previewed before the game came out. You could just buy like different ones, like different characters, different poses, and so there's various things that these purple coins could do, but it's not like core progress so much as like star coins used to be in certain like New Super Mario Brothers games, where it's like, oh, okay, you want to, you know, kind of unlock this thing, this node on the map where you got to spend the star coins to do it. That's the Wonder Seeds now. So they've kind of changed that up a little bit, but it's a lot of the same stuff, I guess, but mostly kind of, like I said, the more freeform philosophy. You can also detect it in the levels themselves, like, especially with these sort of wonder flower segments, in terms of it seems like they can be, you're quite, even just to this point, there's a lot of sort of different ways, shapes that they could take. Some of them are almost more like, you know, visual gags or performances than like that much to do with like the level. Like one of the really early ones that I may as well spoil, because probably everybody would have played it by the time they hear this anyway, is like the piranha plant. You're in a level that's, you know, got a lot of piranha plants in, which is nothing, you know, terribly abnormal. But then once you get the Wonder Flower, they just start doing like a musical number. Like it's very like Glee Club from Rhythm Heaven. Kind of thing, with all these with all these piranha plants start singing and stuff. And it's just like, at that point, I felt guilty about killing them. Like,
no, they need to go.
It's just like they're there coming out. They're not really that aggressive anymore. They're just sort of ambling towards you with musical notes coming out of them. And I'm like, no, let's get the Koopa shell. But eventually, but yeah, you can kind of, you get like roller skating Koopas in a different level and stuff. Like some of it is old. Was just kind of, you know, visual gags, like I said, almost like a little sketch comedy thing. And then other times, you know, there's an element of that, but it also leads to just a very different kind of gameplay all of a sudden in the level, or, you know, way to find a whole other exit to the level and so forth. So, yeah, how well they could keep doing that, how, you know, does it settle into a kind of pattern where it's like, okay, there's a few different kinds of these that I'm kind of used to, and it takes some of that kind of impact off it at a certain point over the length of the game. That'll have to be seen, of course, but to this point it's kind of, you know, amusing on a certain level with the, you know, just the aesthetics of it, but then also it is providing this kind of freeform, you know, dynamic and just a somewhat different flavor to the actual gameplay and the level design, which, you know, even though we haven't had that many new Super Mario Brothers games, obviously, in recent years, there were enough of them in the past, and they played enough of them in the past, that certainly the freshening up, it remains necessary. You know, I don't think it would have been very satisfactory to just sort of trot out one, you know, that was really, really close to it before. Again, you know, and not that this is that radically different, it must be said, you know, it's still pretty faithful. It's still even got the lives, which I was surprised by, you know, when that sort of was initially confirmed that lives were staying. It kind of felt,
yeah, it feels unnecessary.
Once you got to Super Mario Odyssey dropping them, and that was, you know, 6 years ago, pretty much exactly, right? You know, I mean, you fucking felt like that was it. It's just, we're done with that now. It's kind of antiquated. We don't need to worry about it anymore. But no, they're back. And again, is it a big deal? Not really. There's so many coins all about everywhere, especially if you'd like more actively kind of, it's kind of breadcrumbing you a lot in this game with the whole flower kingdom sort of concept. There's these, you know, each sort of area has a particular color of flower that, you know, you can kind of, you'll see it, and then, you know, if you touch it, it kind of opens and then it triggers, like, oh, here's a bunch of coins over here, and then another flower, and you trigger that, and it just like breadcrumbs you to more and more coins, and sometimes to secrets and stuff, and sometimes setting up little kind of puzzles to find, you know, one of the big purple coins or to trigger the wonder flower. So, you know, it's, if you're doing all that stuff, you're probably collecting so many coins that I can't imagine lives are that much of an issue, especially if you didn't want to kind of risk playing some of those higher rated levels that are around. So yeah, I doubt it's a terribly consequential decision in the end to keep the lives in there, but still, I think a bit of a peculiar one. It probably just would have been better to maintain that sort of the precedent that they set with Odyssey, in my opinion, and just like maybe charged you, you know, a few of these purple coins or something for like restarting, but after a certain number of deaths or something. But there it is on that one. I think it'll be a big deal. But yeah, a promising start, I'd say. But we've got lots more to see. Like I said, it's just this feeling of like, okay, you know, I can poke around a little bit in this more open world map and, you know, kind of maybe do one thing and then, you know, open up another path. And then, you know, you were in like this, you know, the first world, for instance, like the Pipe Rock Plateau. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh no, here's some swamp levels for a bit that you can do if you want, you know, that just less rigid. You know, the new Super Mario Bros., which, admittedly, they got a little less rigid as they went. You know, you could do some things like, you know, with new Super Mario Bros. U, for instance, you kind of had different, like, you could kind of skip certain worlds if you went certain ways and did different things. You know, so it got a little bit more like Super Mario World and stuff as it went. But this just feels like it's putting a higher priority on variety from the beginning, and that is a promising start, but we'll see how well they can keep that up over the length of the campaign.
I mean, that is the marketing that they were going with too, of like, it's weird, it's going to be wild.
And a lot of this is the stuff that was, you know, that I've experienced, is the stuff that they were showing, you know, like the big stampede of like bulls and, you know, the big sort of beach ball hippos and all that. So the kind of the pipes doing the worm and all that stuff, yeah. You know, like that is mostly what I've seen so far. So, you know, maybe the real surprises are, you know, yet to come, because it'll be more. Yeah, I've seen some things so far that, you know, clearly they hadn't, you know, kind of been shown, because it, like I said, it gives you that opportunity very early to go off the beaten path. But still, there's, yeah, it'll be interesting how much they can how much these impact these things have as it goes.
So I played the demo that they had set up at kiosks as much as I could. It was extremely loud, and so it was kind of like embarrassing to play it. It was so loud.
Well, that's because you picked Daisy, though.
Well, yeah, that's true. That would have made it worse. I actually went random and ended up with one of the fucking toads. I mean, it was loud in a fairly quiet target at that moment. But the game itself, yeah, I mean, I mostly just saw it was in the marketing material. It's really just the start of the game, because it gets to the point where it goes, yeah, you actually go wherever you want. There's a line, but that line's not real. And then you can just pick a stage. And then I basically stepped away because the noise had gotten so bad that people were looking. And I was like, okay, you're good. I did notice, though, that when they refreshed the demo kiosks for this, they installed standalone Switch units that you can play directly in your hands, like ones that aren't docked, with the OLED screens on it, on this demo kiosk, possibly at the same time. Now that OLEDs are available in stores, they're like, hey, you can buy them now. Yeah, but we'll all get this game in about 2 hours. So right around the time we finish recording, it'll be ready.
Yeah, it's a bit of an unfair comparison, like, for me, having obviously last played, you know, New Super Mario Bros. U on Wii U off TV versus playing this on the OLED model, like how much sharper it is, how much nicer the screen is in general, but it certainly does look a lot nicer than I remember New Super Mario Bros. U looking. You know, because the kind of extra details and flair that's in the graphics comes through on that screen, being, you know, a little bit bigger, but more importantly, you know, brighter. Way better color reproduction than what the streaming offered and all that. It really pops and it looks very nice.
Yeah, I'm very interested to see how that game's gonna look. Cool. Anything else you want to talk about?
Other than that, so it was kind of nice because I was able to kind of wrap up this before the game launched. F-Zero 99 had the Kings League update,
yes.
So I have now cleared that in a Grand Prix. I didn't win, obviously, but I managed to finish it, which is no mean feat on those five tracks, especially when you kind of culminate in Firefield, which is, you know, designed to kill you. It always was. But funnily enough, it's almost anticlimactic when you get to Firefield in a way, because there's only 20 of you having, you know, been whittled down over the course of five races. And I don't know, the race that I was in, it just kind of felt like everyone was trying to survive. They weren't trying to kill each other. There's none of that time pressure anymore of like, okay, well, if you don't get up to your position 35 or whatever, you're going to get eliminated. So I think everyone was just like, especially because it was like the first day pretty much, I think, of this league being introduced. And so everyone was like, I just want to, you know, have survived and, you know, finish with a decent position, get as high up as it kind of lacked the bloodthirstiness that often accompanies F-Zero 99 races, but it's a classic. That track is a classic. It brings back memories of just the real tension as a child trying to cling on for dear life at the end of one of those Grand Prix back in the day. And of course, once you do play it, you can go and do the practice time trial. And I did that. That's the hardest target time to hit in F-Zero 99 for me, by far, was Firefield. But I managed to do that. So, yeah, I kind of feel like I've not wrapped up that game, but it seems like I think they said this is it for tracks. There won't be more tracks. They've said further updates will happen, presumably different events. Maybe some kind of alternate modes or something based on some things that were suggested by data mining and whatnot, but not more tracks. It is just going to be the Super Nintendo one. So, yeah, it kind of feels like one door closing, one door opening today.
Okay. Well, that's cool. I can't deal with the Grand Prix. I'm just not good enough, so I've just been staying away. I was never good at F-Zero though, so this isn't this like perverse version of it is really actually making me super unable to play it.
I say, I think you get people in the Grand Prix in the early races, as I mentioned before, because killing gives you lastingly better health.
Oh, yeah.
Essentially, people will be very aggressive in the early races because the idea is like, okay, hopefully I could get a few KOs and that is really going to set me up for success in the subsequent race. Like I said, then when you get to the end, everyone's chilled the fuck out. So that is the thing. It can be quite daunting, frankly, the early races sometimes. I guess it depends, you know, what kind of crowd you get drawn with, but yeah, it's a lot of the time.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Anything else?
No, I think that'll do it for me.
Okay. I'm going to touch on two things. First one, I did another Garbage Man stream, this time Saul and Simpson's music. And these are slowly killing me, I think, is the answer here. So if you missed my conversation on the first one of these, basically the premise is I go into the eShop and I review everything that's come out since I did the last one of these. And I don't mean everything. I mean, we go through the listing and we look for things that are a particular style of fetid on the eShop. Games where I'm using that term extremely loosely. that are, you know, some of them are asset flips where somebody bought an asset pack and turned it into a commercial product. Some of them are just, like the most basic ass thing. I mean, I made a joke about one earlier. It was like Halloween fun for babies and toddlers. First off, are you going to give your Switch to a baby? No, you're not going to do that. But it was like, find the differences. And it was just a static image where you could drag a cursor around and click on, like, just absolute lowest tier of effort bullshit in the world. A bunch of them are games that have the word hentai in the title. Do any of them have hentai in them? Not that we've seen. It's just like a word that they've been sticking on there for search engine optimization. There's been a lot of those. A lot of the games we look at that are just garbage. That's the whole premise. We're looking for garbage, not just bad games, but true garbage. A lot of them are just a collection of words that are seemingly knitted together to generate search results. So it'll be like, Hentai 2013 simulator parking driving exploration game end game. And that yet the game end game thing has happened multiple times, which leads me to believe these are not named by humans. Or sometimes it's like meme games. You remember Meme Run from the Wii U, which was just awful. There's, this one spread to the PS3 recently. But there's one called Skateboard Drifting Simulator with Maxwell Cat that we find particularly horrible. Maxwell Cat's like a meme from the internet that has been grafted onto this bad-looking skateboarding game that stars, quote, Join Yellowface, which is just an emoticon, Swole Doge, Knuckles the Echidna, Capybara, or of course the legendary Maxwell Cat on their rad skateboarding adventures. It's literally the Ugandan Knuckles sprite. They don't have the rights to this. They've just stuck at the game, and it's on the eShop, but now it's on PlayStation 3 and PlayStation 4 and 5. All three systems have different prices because fuck it. Fuck it. Garbage. Who cares? This kind of shit's been going on the eShop for so long that it's become impossible to use the service. So, like, Instant Marketing and Game is the name of a publisher. That's their real name. All one word. Instant Marketing and Game. They put out so much fetid horse shit every month that it's impossible to get through it. Red Deer.games is another one that if a meteor were to fall from heaven, I wouldn't feel bad about it. I'd be like, yo, that's too bad. Because they're the ones who put out AAA Clock. They put out so many, and so a lot of these games, they'll put out a game, then they'll put out like some very lightweight DLC, extremely lightweight DLC. And then they'll remix the game plus DLC in different permutations as new special editions. And they'll just do this forever. They'll just do version after version after version, and every 20 or so days they'll release a new version, so they're back at the top of the recent releases list, and that version will be on sale, and the old version will have no longer, the most recent version will no longer be on sale. And so you'll go to some of these listings and they'll have 17 or 18 different bundles remixing the same 7 pieces of DLC in different permutations just because they're trying to keep on the top of the list. It's fucking terrible. And the eShop, how it's arranged, shows bundles as unique games. So they're like constantly just bombarding games that are actually new down the list. There's one game I wrote an editorial about because I noted that one of the guys on it was pogging. They're still doing like new versions of that game or new bundles of that game. And I did that back in like February. It's October. It's absurd. So that's the kind of shit we're dealing with. Red Deer.games is one of the worst offenders with AAA Clock. They put out so many bundle versions that they hit the theoretical maximum number of versions the Switch can support and made AAA Clock 2. Is it appreciably different? Not in the fucking slightest. So, I ended up with another one of their, I hope everything bad happens to the people who made this products. Called Piano Learn and Play, because again, I give the chat money and they decide how to spend it. And these fuckers bought Piano Learn and Play, which is normally $19.99 for the game, but there was a bundle that was just come out, haha, that had DLC packs in it that was $2.99. You know what's really funny? You know what makes it really funny? The DLC packs are free. So if you just want the game and none of the DLC, it's $20. And then you can get all the DLC for free. But if you want the bundle that has some of the free DLC, it was $2. I hate this. I hate this so much. The base game comes with 6 songs. 6 fucking songs. And each DLC pack is 2 songs. So these are public domain songs. So Piano Learn and Play is exactly what it sounds like. It's a piano that you can play on the touchscreen of the Switch, or you can use button faces. It's mapped to the keys. You're probably thinking, James, how do you map the limited number of Switch buttons to piano keys? Well, the answer is you only give them 1 octave to play. Not even 2 C's. It goes C, D, E, F, G, A, H. This is what broke us and led this game to getting bought, because it goes C, D, E, F, G, A, H. And if you're a musician, with the exception of a handful of places, you just heard that and had an aneurysm, because the keys are labeled C, D, E, F, G, A, H. And the reason they are labeled C, D, E, F, G, A, H, we thought, was because these people are stupid. They are, but that's not why. In Germany, and in Western Slavic countries, so like Poland, just those countries, just them, B before C is called H. And you might wonder why it would be called H. And the answer is because bad transcription from the old lettering system, where they didn't use a staff, they actually wrote the letters down, and they didn't have printing presses yet. That's why. It's a mistake that the Germans have clung to, which is weird because that's very much out of their character. Did they localize this for the 99% of the world that doesn't call that note H? Nope. Because that would take effort. And Red Deer Games doesn't do effort. So yeah, that was that. It's fucking terrible. And, playing those notes the way they map the keys to buttons on the face pad makes no goddamn sense. It's like a weird inversion of what you'd expect it to be. It's just garbage. Absolute fucking garbage. Don't buy this scam. I don't think I have to tell you that. Don't buy anything from Red Deer Games. I don't tell you that either. It's all garbage. Nintendo needs, like, this is the actual lesson of this series of streams. Nintendo needs to fucking do something, because there are games that I have found over the course of running these streams that, one, I didn't know exist, that, two, looked cool, and three, are from people that I know. Like, these are developers whose games I've played before, and I don't know that they have a new game out. Why? Because you literally can't use the recent releases. You just can't do it. It's not usable, and that's fucking terrible. Like, Nintendo has their, like, curated recent releases, but they can only curate so many games, and so you'll end up with a few games, and many of them are their own. So we don't see this shit. We don't get to see that, like, hey, even something as big as a new Disgaea game doesn't get a featured slot. Or Front Mission 2. Or, honestly, like, Wargroove 2 kind of fell through a little bit. Like, stuff that you would think, well, obviously that's going to get noticed. No! Because we have to get Slots Casino Game. Slots Casino the game, you ask? No, it's Slots Casino Game. 3 words, jammed together, no sentence, nothing. We have to get Vicky Spotter Complete Bundle. It's all the other Vicky Spotter games, which is apparently like a German picture book series where you have to find the owl. This page has 4 owls. Why? I don't know. Nintendo doesn't care. Nobody cares. Caring is gone. Caring is out the window. Everyone hates caring. Get caring out of here. It's just this constant drum of stuff. And instead we end up with 2 sedans, Driving Simulator, which is a game that's an asset flip with 2 sedans, and you drive them.
I just think it's funny how Nintendo has gone from having the seal of quality to effectively just being Steam.
It's worse than Steam, because Steam at least tries to curate the front page.
Yeah.
This is just an absolute dumping ground. Like,
yeah, and Steam never actually pretended to really care.
Right, but they made an effort.
Yes.
But Nintendo is aggressively not making an effort. I just mentioned one of these games literally has the trademarked phrase Knuckles the Echidna in it from a publisher that Nintendo regularly makes first-party games with. You would think Nintendo would go, you can't fucking put that in there.
Mm-hmm.
I know Sega didn't sign off on this, you fucks. Get that out of there. Nah, it's fine. De Good Fabric, who I reviewed one of their games, and they made Sports Friends. They made Mutazioni. They, like, I talked about that on the show. They had a game out. I didn't know they had a game out called Salt Sea Chronicles, but it's buried on the eShop under shit like Dino Ranch Ride to the Rescue or Subpar Pool, which Neil just reviewed and thought it was really good, is buried under things like Trapped in the Tricky Prison and Break the Glass Cup, Breaking Physics Puzzle. It's just fucking unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, discoverability, if you're not a Nintendo game, is just abysmal.
Yeah, or a game that they're basically pushing really hard, yeah. Which is a limited list. Astro Smash. John, guess what? Did you know that the Amico has broken contain and is now all over the Switch? 3 Amico exclusives, air quotes, are now available on the Switch, including wow. Shark Shark and Astro
thought?
Smash.
You got to keep Tallarico in that Ferrari.
Fucking Astro
right?
Smash. Astro Smash, John. It's $20. $20.
Is this what? Is this the remake of the original Astro Smash?
Yeah, this is the one that they were showing with the Amico. Yes.
God bless.
Shark and Dino Blast.
This is actually how Skynet gets started, right?
No, because this is too stupid. Skynet was smart. This is anti-Skynet. This is ground covering. It's
maybe that's what Skynet wants you to think.
No.
Also, are we talking original Skynet or like T3 Skynet?
Oh God.
This is the T10,000 Skynet.
I think in T3 it was like a computer virus or something they changed it to, so I don't know.
Yeah.
Sort of propagation.
Yeah. I guess that's what I was thinking of, yeah.
Ultimate Jigsaw Puzzle Collection. What is it? It's 6 PNGs that we've cut up like jigsaw puzzles.
But I mean, there has to be. I mean, of all the jigsaw collections out there, there has to be.
No,
an ultimate.
There doesn't. There doesn't. It's not this one. The Grinch Christmas Adventures.
I had to really concentrate to get through that without bursting out laughing.
Oh yeah, I know. There are 5 stick figure zombie games that came out on the same day from 2 distinct publishers. I'm going to stop going through this because I'll lose my goddamn mind. But I just want to do one more. This one came out the day I was getting ready to do this. Or, you know what? No, I'm going to do more than one more. I'm going to do 3 more. Sorry. Submersible Simulator - Discover the Titanic into the Ocean. No, excuse me. Discover the Titanic into Ocean. Not yeah. The ocean.
Maybe you're just discovering it into the ocean. Maybe it's an alternate history where the Titanic
where the submersible didn't implode
came up
when
on
people
shore,
went down there
James,
to see it,
and you're discovering it back into the ocean.
I've seen that cartoon, John. It's Italian. It's real. It's called The Legend of the Titanic. It's rescued by whales.
Might have happened.
I'm not even joking
about
that.
You can't prove it to me
shit.
That it didn't happen.
I'm not
happen.
Joking. There are 3 Italian Titanic cartoons.
It's Italy's
fucking
a crazy place. You can't tell me that. I mean,
Italy
Titanic,
is a crazy place. You're right.
No, the Titanic there, may be there.
There is literally a game about taking a submersible to the seafloor to see the Titanic. There's no way that game started 1 second before the infamous submersible imploded, killing all people on board at the side of the Titanic. Zero. Absolutely is a consequence of that. Those people dying. There's a game called Special Ops, which would be really boring if it wasn't for the fact they misspelled their own title in the eShop listing. So it's Specia Ops with no L. It's 3 apps, one of which is use the IR sensor on the Switch Joy-Con like it's a night vision camera. It doesn't work. But then the real piece de resistance, Need for Spirit Drink and Drive Simulator. It is a game about drinking and driving. I'm going to quote their article here because I think it's important. Need for Speed delivers a humorous, excuse me, Need for Spirit, can't get sued, delivers a humorous take on a serious subject, making it clear the game does not endorse or encourage drunk driving in real life. Enjoy the absurdity while staying safe. But you know what? Let's actually takes the other part. Rev up that engine and embrace the chaos and get ready for a racing adventure you won't forget. Embark on the journey of a hapless professional driver tasked with delivering alcoholic beverages to various celebrations. He is battling the perils of the abysmal roads while on your very own addiction to booze that you're transporting. It's a game about a booze addict who's driving booze and drink driving. And they're like, don't drink and drive for real, kids. Fuck that. eShop's the worst. eShop's the fucking worst. And it gets every time I do one of these streams, I find something that like challenges my ability to understand the depravity of the service. Like you get there and you're like, no, you can't have a game called Cat's Bundle. That's stupid. And you open it up and it's eight asset flips, or a game called The Love Date Simulator with Girls. Glad they clarified, with 3 AI generated images of women on them. I just can't deal with this shit. It's out of control. But then you see stuff when you're going through, I'm like, that's like a cool game. Nobody's going to know that game exists. What a shame. Hot Wheels Unleashed 2 Turbocharged is probably pretty cool, but it's buried under shit like Animal Hospital. So yeah, that's what that stream's turned into. Every time I do it, I get sadder and sadder because I have to go read about Revenge of Banana. Or a game, Arcade Archives is getting to the point where they're kind of doing this because they're reviving shit nobody cares about.
What's it called? Gunter Gunter?
Gunter Gunter.
Or something.
Yeah, but their most recent one is called Arcade Archives Blandia. You know what? If bland is in the name of the game, maybe you don't need to bring it back.
It's probably, a Japanese mistranslation. Like, it's supposed to be Brandia.
Yeah, maybe I don't know.
You shoot Coke cans or something.
But maybe they should just not. Or a game that's just, remember the that Wii app where it just like asks you yes or no questions? What was it called? It's just Pulp.
Everybody Votes?
Yeah! We're just like, would you rather cat or dog? There's an app called...
The Arcade Archives have been doing a game a week for 6.5 years or plus or whatever it is. I mean, you kind of...
It's time to stop. You've done them all.
They had to verge into some weird territory eventually. Although sometimes they do some stuff that's more mainstream, more kind of... I think you've got... The 3-screen version of Darius 2 came out the other week. Like, just stuff that's not earth shattering, but at least it's filling some sort of gap in something that people know, some people remember at least.
Yeah, this week, I didn't know what the title was. It's Gutangatong.
Yeah, Gutangatong. Yeah.
It's that famous game that's basically Pipe Dreams, it seems.
Yeah, it's just Pipe Dreams. But. What if I could give you the Everybody Votes channel, but as an app on your Switch for $3 called Choice Clash, What Would You Rather? Experience a world of choices in this ultimate decision-making game with 300 mind-bending dilemmas. Your path, your destiny awaits. I don't know why they put a comma clause there. Those two things are unrelated. Your path, comma, your destiny awaits, exclamation, and you, what would you wrath? They ran out of space in the abstract when they pasted it in, and nobody noticed, so it just ends with, and you, what would you wrath? Level of quality unimaginable. So what is this great mind-bending dilemma? Would you rather be able to speak to animals or be able to speak all languages? Mind-bending. Would you rather be the largest person on the planet? Notice it doesn't say what dimension you're the largest person on the planet. Or be the smallest person on the... Who the fuck's gonna pick be the smallest person on the planet? I would like to be extraordinarily small. No one wants that. Would you rather have the... they really have three examples. Live without internet or live without air conditioning or heating? Well, if I don't have heating, I'm gonna die. So... just a thought. Like, oh my God, this is unbelievable. Anyway, I need to talk about something else. So I'm gonna talk briefly about Forza Motorsport, which is, we kept calling it Forza 8. This is the newest Forza, the new Forza. John talked about it last week. I started playing it after the episode, and wow, this game feels really sweaty. And I'm using that in like the online gameplay standpoint, where it's like, oh, this is a game for people who are doing try hard stuff. Like, it just feels less fun in a lot of ways than the last Forza game I played, not Horizon, which is, I think was like 6. It was 5. It was the first one on Xbox One. Here's what I mean. So when you start the game, the single player mode, it's a bunch of different campaigns. And the first one is like modern cars. And you run a bunch of races in a series. You get a car with no tuning at all. And then you run a bunch of practice laps with that car, and then you get to run a race on the same track. And then you can, as you race the car, the car levels up, which is dumb. John talked about that last week, but I
like that. Personally, I like it.
But it means I can't customize the car.
Yes.
And that's
dumb. That's what I said. This is what people criticize, but I happen to like that. I don't mind it. Because it gives you a reason to play more cars. It kind of gives you an interest, whereas previously you would just be like, you would just type in, Google, tell me what the best cars are in Forza 7. And then you would just use those cars and never touch anything else.
See, I didn't do that. So that's part of it. I'm thinking just from these racing series standpoint, where you're stuck with the same car the whole time, even when that car's not suited to all the races in that series. And I have so limited options in how I want to manipulate the car that, you know, the cars that you have a choice of in the, so I cleared the first series. I got first place in it. It's only 3 races, but the thing is, there's like, I don't know, probably
it gets harder quick though. It does, right?
Yeah. But there's probably like 12 series total. But the thing is, like, you clear one series and now you can't just pick what type of car you want to drive. It only unlocks one more series. You have to run these things sequentially. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to have more choice in, like, what kind of cars do I want to experience?
Yeah.
Rather than, like, okay, I got to run the next series. Because these series are kind of dry.
Yeah, they're a bit dry.
And like, the idea that's, okay, you got to run these practice laps. Okay, you run the practice laps. Now you can tune your car. You can't go back and rebuild your car now that you've run the, you had to do that before the practice laps.
I do like that they have the kind of the ability to customize your car or upgrade the performance, just to kind of like the one click performance upgrade. That's what I did through all of them. Really helps you, because I still couldn't get first place in a lot of the things. What kind of annoys me, and it was the same thing in Forza 7, is if you can't make a move immediately into the top 3, you're screwed.
Yeah. So
you're just done. Like, you will see, even if you make it up to second, that first place car will just be 10 miles ahead of you.
Oh yeah. And that used to happen in the Forza games that I played, because I would be that first place car. Like, I would get out there and then I just didn't see anybody. It was just over.
Yeah.
So the race I was running just now, I'm in the second series you unlock. So I've cleared the first series. I'm in the second series. I'm on like race 4 or 5. And it's Watkins Glen is the track. And so when you do the practice laps, you have to do 3 laps, and the idea is, oh, you'll learn the track. So first off, I couldn't figure out why I couldn't accelerate through the turns in the way I wanted to. And then I realized by default, assist is on like super high. So I had to go into the menu and turn it off, even though I had set the difficulty relatively high.
Yeah, I set it to expert right out of the gate.
Yeah.
So, but it's funny because they say it's expert, but really it's just there's no assists and you get penalized.
Right.
Like, so, it's not that it's – I don't think it's any harder than anything else. It's just that you actually have to focus on you know, you can't just do the old, I want to get around this car, so I just bulldoze it out of the way, or I do a cut across a corner, you know.
Yeah.
The thing is with the penalizing, though, it's – I found it's really flaky. Like, there's times when I would get penalized when a car cuts in front of me and I hit it.
Yeah.
There's sometimes where it would penalize me for it, and I'd be like, what?
I got penalized for getting T-boned by a car that wasn't going the direction of the track.
Yeah.
And I'm like
there's stuff like that.
I'm like, hold on.
Like, what are you talking about?
So I have Rewind on because it's just to save my time more than anything. And yeah. I don't use it that much, but in that case, I was like, fuck that. I'm not eating. It was like a 2 second penalty. I'm like, no, fuck that. I think it was like 1-1-5 or some shit like that. No.
Yeah.
So I couldn't get past fourth. Like third was sitting, like I couldn't, because I can't upgrade the car I want to. And looking at that track, I would have just jammed acceleration into that car. But I didn't have the things unlocked that would give me that.
Yeah, so you're saying to beat it, you're thinking you're going to have to max the car out to 50 and then come back.
Right.
Yeah.
It's like, but I need to be able to, like, for this track, on this day, this car needs to be an acceleration beast. It doesn't really need, like, it needs to be acceleration and braking. It doesn't really need great handling, because I'm going to brake a lot through these turns. They're too sharp. They're too sharp to try to power through, so yeah. I was going to have to like brake a lot.
I'm curious, though. Can you circumvent that through tuning, like by downloading? Like, can I? Because no. This is something I haven't tried. Like, if you can download somebody's tune,
I don't think so.
Yeah.
But it was just like I have the money to buy these things. I'm just told I'm not allowed.
Yeah.
Also, I feel like earning money in this one's really tricky because you have to like pick your position on the starting grid.
Yep.
Which is really setting yourself up to just get screwed because you basically need a beautiful start to just get past. I would say if you don't make it past sixth before the second turn, you're done. Because
yeah, you are
in that opening mess, like. It establishes like the stratigraphy of the race.
Yeah, like there's it's either you're immediately in the like maybe the top five or right. You're just never gonna crack it.
Yeah, so like,
and even then, good luck trying to get first.
So
you're probably not gonna get it.
In that, I like to try to start around 10th, which I don't like. The fact that you could pick your starting grid, why don't they just use our laps and seed us? Because you get rewarded for picking a worse starting position. Which yeah. is fine, but that's not how racing works. Like it's weird. Like they wanted to have the penalty system and be like actual racing, and like no, you get rewarded for doing clean passes. It's like, well, what's a clean pass versus a normal pass? Because like I passed the guy. Who the fuck cares how clean it was? I didn't hit him. Like why is that pass good and that pass bad? I still passed him. He's still in my dust now. But. You know, I would much rather like they'll set a target speed for one for your flying laps, and like I was regular. I had one; I took 4 seconds off what they said should be the target time, and it didn't fucking matter because once you got on the track, it was just a completely different thing. I'd rather just hit the track because you can just restart the race. Like, just let me learn the track on the track, then. Like, if that's the case, there's a bunch of weird shit like. The menus feel like they're, I mean, you talked about it last week. Menus aren't good, but they feel like they're a step back from some of the previous Forza games. Like the, if you want to put a wrap on your car, it's, you know, normally in the Forza games, it's a grid showing you like, here's 9. This one, it's a vertical column, you know, the direction that's the shortest on your TV.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh God, and I know why. It's because they only wanted to load 4 at a time. Mm-hmm. But they're loading these tiny fucking pictures. It's like, I can't even tell what I'm looking at. I want to put anime girls on my car. This is what I do.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. I haven't checked that out because I don't care about having anime girls on my car do.
It's a mistake. Like, I agree. It's a mistake
It's a life choice, I think.
But like,
it's more of a lifestyle for you.
They actually
kind of
bury that option. Like, remember when you bought cars and all the other Forza games, it asked you, do you want to paint them or do you want to put a skin on them?
No.
You can only paint them, and then you have to go out to your car library, which is out of the race series, and do it, which is weird. But another thing I noticed that was really odd, John, is there any fucking music in this game?
You know, I don't know if there is.
There's no music in the
races at
all. I mean,
there is at the very start when the game loads, but yeah, I don't know. There is. There's music in the game, but it's very low key.
No, there's music in the game in the menus, but there's no music in the game when you're in the car.
Yeah.
At all. It's just not there.
Well, I mean, you know, some of us are there for the racing. They're not there to be entertained. They're not there to see a fucking orchestra, James. All right?
But here's the problem, John. I just ran like a 7-lap race. And for about the last 4 laps, I was in second. and I couldn't see third, and I couldn't see first. I was on a road trip for the last four laps, John. I just need music.
You should just enjoy the silence, all right? Just enjoy it.
So I noticed this and was like, what the fuck? I thought I was losing my mind. And then I noticed Gerstmann made the same observation. And apparently in the review kit, they told them that you can use your Spotify app alongside the game, which is just a feature of the Xbox.
I mean, you can.
That's just a feature of the Xbox.
You can also pull up Spotify on your laptop and play it while you're playing the game.
That has nothing
to do with the game at all.
That was his point. He's like, yeah, I could just get a cassette player and listen to old mixtapes.
Exactly. You know, you can listen to birds chirping outside while you play this game. Yes, I can. It has nothing to do with the game.
They
awesome.
Put that in the next reviewers.
This dangerously close to how the voice app works for Switch.
Yeah, exactly.
Get out your phone, but don't use it like a phone.
Yeah,
don't use it
like a phone.
Don't use any of the many apps that have voice calls on them. Don't do that either. Use our specific bullshit app that requires you connect via the Switch first. Yeah, it's weird. It just feels very odd. Now, I will say that the Drivatars do feel kind of aggressive, which is weird because I'm getting penalized sometimes because of their fucking bullshittery.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't feel like they're getting penalized. I feel like they should get penalized. Like I should be able to see that number 22 lost two seconds.
Yeah, and I feel like cars can ram into you and nothing happens to them.
Oh yeah,
like they'll straight up take you off the road, especially if anything goes sideways and you're vulnerable. Cars will just ram right into you and just keep going.
Yeah.
You're screwed and nothing happens to them.
I also noticed I haven't seen any weather at all. Like
I have.
Okay, that's good. Because I remember in whatever that Forza game I was playing on Xbox One was, I remember running like a 30-lap race in just absolutely driving English rains and just watching cars just go like completely off the track because of the rain. And like that being a really, we'll say, extraordinarily stressful experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's very difficult because when things go sideways, things go really sideways in the rain.
Yeah, but also that race was like an hour long.
Yeah. Well, there's one race in there. You probably haven't gotten to it yet, but it's on, I think it's on the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, and it's 35 laps.
God.
So, yeah, you just keep going around and around and around and around.
Yeah, and that's kind of the Brickyard's a great track for certain kinds of racing. But the kinds of cars that I'm allowed to race right now are like, hey, I have an Audi 2008.
Yeah.
And I'm like, man, I want to race a hypercar.
Yeah, it's a bit of a slow starting game, I would say.
Yeah, that's a bummer. Like, I want to be able to pick the style of racing that appeals to me. And I don't mean in the Horizons way. Like, in Forza 6, you were given a lot of fucking cars, or 5, whichever one I was playing. And I had a lot of cars very early, and I could try different things. And if it wasn't working, I could swap them out.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like it's a little bit too linear.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, I feel like, yeah, and I think that can kind of go both ways. You know, I think maybe with the other games, the criticism was that it felt too wide open and people didn't know what to do, unless you were super hardcore and wanted to figure out all the tuning and all of that kind of stuff. But it feels like they've backed it out the other direction, possibly to an extreme, where they almost try to handhold you too much.
Oh, yeah. That opening tutorial is brutal.
Yeah, and I think it's also, it is overkill to make you do 3 practice laps for all of those things. Like,
right.
It's not bad from the standpoint, like, I don't hate it, because, I mean, I enjoy the game, and it does make you better at the track when you finally do run it.
Sure.
But you're just like, okay, I gotta do 3 practice laps. All right, fine. Okay. I'll do it again.
Yeah, there are times where it's like, I actually don't need this.
I don't need this because I actually know this track pretty well, and I don't really need to do 3 practice laps. But
or this track is basically just a ring.
Yeah.
Why do I need to run 3 laps of this ring? I'm good. Yeah, I don't know. There's just something here just feels a little less exciting, a little less interesting, and I think part of that's because I'm driving. I'm driving a car that I could just go down to like a used car dealership and buy for $4,000 right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I think it is part of it is because you can't just have a super duper version of the car. I mean, in past Forzas, you could download a tune, a tuning setup, and boom, your car's kicking ass and you can just go and blow through any track pretty much.
And I built my own tunes, but at least, you know, I could do that. Whereas this game's like, no. You gotta build tunes as you level the car up. And it's like, you've unlocked exhaust. And I'm like, I don't give a fuck about the exhaust.
Right. You've unlocked ballast. Great.
Yeah, I want to make the car weigh more. That's my goal. No, I want acceleration.
Exactly. Which effectively, like something like that, you will not use that unless you're trying to purposely bring a car that's above class down to a certain level.
Yeah, it's like that shouldn't be unlocked ever.
Yeah, like if you have a car that's like 720 and you're trying to bring it down to 699 just so you can use it in a race and destroy everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. It's literally sandbagging.
Yeah. It feels like you're like,
that's literally the term.
Yeah, and I can see where you're coming from in the sense that the game is kind of trying to make you play it its way.
Right. Like, I know how to make this car work, stay under the point value, and stay within the budget that I currently have.
Yeah. Like, this one's a bit more prescriptive, so.
Yeah. It's like, but you're not just not letting me build the car I want to build. And so, yeah, that's been really frustrating, and it's probably going to keep me from getting too deep in this game. Mm-hmm. I just want to do a race with cars that are not meant for my hands. Yeah. That's what it comes out. I want to do a race in cars that no human would trust me with. Mm-hmm. And then I forgot something about the Xbox Series X controller because I haven't used it in a while. And you, John, I'll be curious if yours has this, and Guillaume as well. The right trigger, and I Googled this, and a lot of people have this problem. If you push it all the way down, does it stick for a split second?
No, not on this. I mean, I'm using the Elite Series 2 controller.
of course you are.
Yeah, but, okay.
And I say that, I don't say that to swing my dick around. What I'm saying is I haven't had one of those controllers destroy itself that way. Usually it falls apart in other ways.
Yes. So,
but are you talking about the trigger or the shoulder button?
The trigger.
See, for me, it's always been the shoulder button dying or the rubber grip on it falling off, just straight up falling off from the heat in my hands, which are my hands that are apparently
like I'm
the Human Torch or something, shooting fire out of my hands that melts the grip off of these controllers. I don't know. But yes, I have not had that particular failure, but it's not saying it's not going to happen.
So mine's done that pretty much since I got it. I just forgotten because I haven't used it that much. Gil, what about you? Have you seen it?
No, I haven't.
So I Googled it, and it may be something that applies to like launch units or early units, but there's a little, you know how the triggers aren't as clicky on the Xbox Series controllers as they are on like the Xbox One controllers?
Yeah.
That's because they put a little like foam rubber pad under where the thing fully goes down through. So it's not a piece of plastic stopping it. Well, it is, but there's a piece of foam rubber on top of it. So it doesn't make as much noise. And they glue them in place. The problem is they overglued a bunch of them.
Mm-hmm.
So there's too much glue. And so glue got on the top of the pad. So when you depress the button, it sticks slightly. And then that glue breaks and it pops up the controller. That's the gas button. That's been a problem a couple times.
Yeah.
The instructions on how to do it, fix it, are take apart your controller, remove the pad, remove the glue from the pad using a chemical, re-glue the pad. I'm like, that sounds fucking miserable. I'm not doing that.
Yeah.
It requires like tweezers and shit to do it because, of course, they do it while the thing's still being assembled. I'm like, no, I'm not doing that.
Yeah, and you know, I wish I could sit here and say the PS5 controller was any better, but my controller now has stick drift on the left stick, so it's always going. So you know, when I'm playing Monster Hunter, I just let the stick go, and my guy just starts walking to the left.
He's gonna walk right into the mouth of Arathalos.
Yep. So that's cool. It's like all these controllers. It just kills me. All of these controllers now are so costly.
Yes.
But their build quality is total crap.
You should just put the controller down and see where he ends up. Maybe the game will lead you to a hidden area. Just come back like an hour later, see where you wound up.
Yeah. But with that, I mean, it's like And the thing is, too, is these controllers, you also can't take them apart anymore.
No.
This is what kills me. I mean, back in the days of the NES and Super NES, you could at least just sit there and unscrew the controller and fix it yourself. Can't do that anymore. These things are all like molded plastic.
So I looked at the instructions on how to open the Xbox Series controller to do this change. And in fact, the grips are effectively the clamp holding the controller together. So on the, if you notice how there's like the part that's got textured?
Yeah.
That's actually a separate piece of plastic that connects the top and bottom shell. And you can like remove it if you pry it off very gently so you don't break it. It's like, oh my God, I'm not going to deal with that. I'll just.
But then how do you put it back on?
It'll snap back on. I mean, it clips on to start with. So you're like, I'm not going to run the risk of breaking my controller to deal with the sticky pad.
No.
It's just annoying.
And the thing is, I don't even know if you can actually send those controllers in to get them fixed.
They probably won't consider that broken. They'd be like, yeah. No, it's fine. Yeah, I don't know. It's weird. It's just one of those things where it's like, why? Why can I Google this and many people report the same issue? Like, what?
Yeah.
It's
amazing. I mean,
many
everybody
of them reporting,
you know,
it like days within the game or the system's launch.
Yeah.
It's like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway, all right. That's enough of my complaining, but that's been my week. Welcome to video games. John, I know you said earlier that you didn't really have anything. Is that just,
yeah,
that
I don't really
true?
Have much, but you know what I have been playing just kind of randomly, but you know, hey, it is spooky season, so I might as well get spooky. I decided on my Steam Deck, I've been playing Bloodstained: Ritual of the Night, just because I kind of a jonesing for sort of some Metroidvania action. And I mean, it's good. It's real Metroidvania, right? It's probably a little bit more difficult than I thought it would be. Looks really good. I mean, it was funny because, like, I'm not that far into it at all. I've just been playing it in kind of fits and starts. But the first boss was really kicking my ass, and all I had to fight him with was just this awful whip or a claymore, which has good range, but is just super, super slow. And so it took me probably about 5 or 6 times to beat that boss, maybe even more. And I was thinking, am I doing something wrong here? This is literally the first boss in the game. I would think that it would be a slam dunk, but it's not a slam dunk. In fact, it's kicking my ass. But I do like, I definitely like it. It definitely seems like Symphony of the Night plus, you know, with a bunch of different systems in it. You know, it has all of the, you know, quite a number of different ways to craft stuff. It just seems like there's a lot to it. And the graphics are pretty good. The 3D models they use for the characters are kind of weird. Definitely very anime, which I am, you know, normally I'm dead set against. I do make my exceptions. Monster Hunter, definitely not an anime game. Definitely not.
Not in the slightest.
Nope. Not even close.
Look at that cat dancing. Not anime
it's
at all.
Extremely serious. Extremely serious and not anime whatsoever. No matter what Seren says, I don't care. She's wrong.
That game is one step away from being VTubers. Like, we are. You are as the anime is shit.
What, Bloodstained is?
No.
Monster Hunter?
Yeah.
I mean, you're completely wrong. And I understand. You're making a joke. I get it. I get your attempt at humor.
Am I, John?
But yeah,
never anime, famously non-anime company Capcom.
Hashtag never anime. So yeah, but Bloodstained, it's pretty cool. It's definitely scratches that itch. I haven't played what is the other one? Circle of the Moon is popping into my head, but
Curse of the Moon. Yeah, that's like the classic Castlevania counterpart, like using those characters, that world. I don't know exactly how sort of directly or, you know, kind of accurately it ties into the story or whatever. But yeah, Inti creates who, you know, make loads of kind of side-scrolling platform action games of various sorts for various people, teamed up with Igarashi to make two of those. Yeah, and they're both pretty good if you like the classic brand of Castlevania.
Yeah. Yeah, they're scratching the itch, and you know, Ritual of the Night looks really good, really cool backgrounds. So, uh, So yeah, so I'm playing it through. Although I'm not sure, I don't know if the Steam Deck can totally handle it. I just get a little bit of slowdown. But I don't know, maybe if I could tweak that with settings or something. But I'd be curious to maybe play it on the Series X and see if it's... I mean, obviously, the Series X is vastly more powerful than the Steam Deck, so I'm sure it behaves a lot better. But still, it's good to be able to play it on the run. One thing I also did pick up is an 8-bit Do controller. Is it 8-bit Do or 8-bit Do? I don't know.
Anybody I don't know? Know.
Anyways. So, yeah, there was this is one of my Prime Day purchases was their controller. It's actually a Switch controller. I'm using it for the Steam Deck, which is kind of funny because I was using my Xbox controller for the Steam Deck, and it's not – it's fine, but it's I have to use batteries with it since I don't really have a proper charger. I don't have a charger for it with a charger pack. So I was using batteries for it, which is kind of annoying. But also, for playing games like Tetris, just like Tetris Connected –
yes.
Or Tetris Effect, not great. The D-pad pretty much sucks. It's just not great for it. And so, I of course, I say that, but I haven't quite used this with Tetris Effect connected, but I'm sure it's better for the fact that it's not an Xbox controller. Their D-pads are notoriously garbage.
Yeah, they're not good.
Yeah. And so this one is pretty sweet because you can use it with... So this is their ultimate Bluetooth controller. And so you can use it with Switch. You can use it with anything. Like, so it has a 2.4 gigahertz mode and then a normal Bluetooth mode. So you can use it with the PC, Steam Deck, Switch. So it's pretty handy. And it comes with a charging base. I also picked up a carrying case for it, which is pretty nice, which is definitely handy with the Steam Deck when you're taking the Steam Deck on the road with you. So, yeah, I like it so far. So I mean, they make some really good stuff. Them along with Analog, they're one of these manufacturers where I just look at their stuff and I'm like, I need to stop looking at this page because their controllers are really cool looking. They also have this one thing I may pick up, even though I wouldn't say I don't need it, but I don't really need it. They have a really cool Famicom styled keyboard, like Bluetooth keyboard that you can use, which actually would be nice to use with my Steam Deck because the only keyboard that I have with it right now is this travel keyboard, which is just kind of awkward because it's like its design is focused on being as small as possible and it's foldable, so it's not great for kicking around and just doing kind of normal work in the desktop mode of the Steam Deck. So I may pick that up. It's looking sweet. It's, you know, it's all the Famicom colors and the Famicom kind of fonts on everything, and so it's pretty cool.
I've looked at it and I've thought about it, and I'm like, I just want to I don't want to buy that without knowing how it feels, though. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. I read the review of it, I think on PC Mag, and they said it feels really good, but they said the keys might be a bit squishy for keyboard enthusiasts, and they really like the one from Razer. There's a really good one from Razer, even though the one from 8-Bit Do is only $100. That's the thing. They said the one from Razer is $160. I don't know the exact model. But
so here's the thing, and I struggle with this with reviews. Like, keyboards have two types of reviews. They have, like, standard product reviewer who's like, yeah, it doesn't explode when I beat on it with my fists, and I could pour coffee on it, and it's fine.
Yeah.
And then you have the keyboard perverts reviews.
Yeah, yeah, I know. There are
who are like, the sumptuous click of the Q key is particularly noteworthy on this keyboard.
Yeah, like they're reviewing wine or something. Or like,
I found the lift on these keys to be slightly too low for my taste. I would have preferred they be approximately 0.25 millimeters higher.
Yeah.
And I'm like, are you fucking the keyboard?
Yeah.
What am I doing right
now?
It's
like,
calm down.
A normal person, not a keyboard pervert.
How do I engage with this supple keyboard that you have spoken of?
Yes. What about a normal person who just likes keyboard missionary position?
That's right.
As opposed to your S&M.
Are you trying to name the episode right now? Because you're doing a very good job.
I do try. But I see where you're coming from, though. So it's like, but this is the whole thing. It's like the keys may be squishy. Okay. I don't really care. I don't care how clicky they are. I just really kind of need it to type in.
I
probably,
I
like, you know, ESPN.com is like, can I type in ESPN.com on it? Tell me that.
So the thing is, I do care if they're squishy sometimes.
Yeah, depending.
I think about the old fucking Dell keyboards that used to come they came when I had a desktop at work. They came with the desk. Every time I got a new desktop, I got brand new bottom of the line Dell standard keyboards.
Yeah, those keyboards were awful, man.
And yeah, their keys were real fucking squishy. And you know what I did? I went to fucking Office Max, bought a keyboard, got white out, put my name on top of it, made clear it was my fucking property. The company didn't own it. And just chucked that Dell keyboard literally down the hall one time because I was so fucking tired of that shit. So that kind of squishy, I care. But when a keyboard pervert says it's squishy, they am I even going to notice?
Yeah.
Am I even going to care?
Yeah.
I don't know. That one also comes with two big A and B buttons that are programmable. And I'm like,
I don't understand that either. The action
buttons.
That shit's
just going to get launched into my closet the minute I unpack it.
Yeah. I don't need that.
I'm going to throw that in the closet so hard it's going to leave a hole in the wall. Get the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's made reading reviews of keyboards almost impossible because you have it fits on my desk and I can type my name. Mm-hmm. And it's well, that's good. I'm glad you've reviewed it as an effective device. And then you have the subtle rise of the back half of this keyboard brings to mind excellent Razer products of the mid 2020s that I have strongly missed in their new line. I'm like, what the fuck?
It's like I don't really know when this happened, but at some point keyboards became fetishized, and it's really weird.
Simulates the linear motion keys without giving up its full mechanical nature.
Yeah, and then you have the keyboards that are just only certain keys, and or there's certain layouts, or this one doesn't include a numerical pad, and it's like, what?
This keyboard refuses the letter Q.
Yeah.
It's like, what do you do if you type a Q? You don't.
So, yeah, I don't know. But, yeah, bottom line is 8-bit though, they make some real cool stuff. So, I don't know.
Yeah.
I am kind of in the market for a Bluetooth keyboard. I would like something that's not. I don't want a full sized. I do actually have a Bluetooth keyboard, but for some reason it's. And I think maybe it's because of the Bluetooth version, maybe or something. But it doesn't. I don't think it actually connects to Steam Deck, or it does, but it doesn't work properly. I've never been able to I can't just. I expected it to just be able to take it. It's an old Logitech Bluetooth keyboard, and I expected to just be able to pick it up because hey, Bluetooth is Bluetooth, right? Probably not. So I expected to just be able to pick it up and, just start using it, but it just doesn't never really work.
You should go import one of those Pokemon Teaches Typing DS games that comes with the Bluetooth keyboard.
Yeah, maybe.
They're apparently kind of decent Bluetooth keyboards for that DS game that has a Bluetooth receiver in the cart because the DS didn't know what Bluetooth was.
Yeah.
Which is so fucking wild.
But I just think I think the gist of it is keyboards are way more complicated these days than you ever would have thought.
Or they ever needed to be.
Yeah, than they ever needed to be. But yeah. So as far as I can tell, it's a pretty good controller. I didn't think it through, and I didn't realize I was buying a Switch controller. The weird thing is that it feels weird because I've played games on the Steam Deck with the Xbox controller, so I'm used to the buttons being, clockwise being Y, B, A, X. And of course on the Switch, they're actually kind of reversed.
They're the correct way.
Yeah. They're the correct way. And it's funny because I was like, this is wrong. And then I started thinking, oh no, this is actually right.
They got here first. They got to set the order.
They got it. Yep. That's right. So, so the B button is at the bottom and then, then going counterclockwise, it's, A, X, Y.
It's really weird that the Xbox use the same letters.
Yeah. But I don't know. But also, why did they switch? Why wouldn't they just go with, I'm sure they did it just to be different, literally. But why didn't they just go with the Super NES layout?
Why not just go with 1, 2, 3, 4?
Yeah.
1, 2, 3, 4. You know, that'd be really easy to kind of mentally map in your head.
Yeah. While I'm here bitching about controllers.
Yeah, we're just bitching about random stuff. We're
just
segment.
Bitching about
Fuck
random
it.
Stuff. What is up with the PS5 controllers and their stupid buttons? They have the share button, but then there's that other button that is actually kind of the start button. I don't even know what it's called.
The share button and the don't share button.
Yeah, I mean they have the big goofy sort of mouse pad button, right? But the button just to the right of that you use to like pause every game. Oh, I don't even know what that's called. Like, I'm trying to tell other people, like, what to do. Like, oh, yeah, just press the start button.
Oh,
what, there's no start button on this controller.
We got to the era where those buttons don't have names anymore?
Yeah, they're all just icons. Same thing with the Xbox controllers. It's like, people, can you just name these buttons?
At least Nintendo has the temerity to call them plus and minus and then make them plus and minus shaped.
Exactly. Like, just, oh, God, it just drives me nuts. Anyways, I'm done. I'm done.
Yes. No, we're done. Guillaume.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah,
we got.
No, I mean, this was all relatable, I gotta say. Because, yeah, I keep telling Karen, though, press the start button. Which one is the start button?
Ah!
Well, it's awful. You know. Awful.
Yeah. But, yeah, so not a whole lot, unfortunately. I'm afraid I don't have, like, a rant like James had or like John had.
Just make
or
some
Super Mario Brander impression. So I guess I'll just say that I finished. I got the credits on Chained Echoes.
Oh,
and,
good.
I kind of regretted, you know, like I did a little bit of editing on the episode. I did keep the content where I was just bashing the writing of the game. But I kind of felt like I belabored the point a little bit. The writing was not the reason why I was playing through that game. Just the fact that it was fun. The combat was fun. The exploration was fun. The missions were fun. All of that. Were the main reason why I was playing the game. And, but then, like, it was hard to give examples of, you know, what I thought was bad writing without kind of seeming like I hated the game. So I regretted doing that because finishing the game, you know, I think mostly the story stuck that ending. You know, like, there were, emotional moments or character moments that were nice that I didn't really see coming. And it seems like it kind of tied nicely three levels of RPG bullshit. You know, I said that, it's as if like the politicking in Game of Thrones suddenly took a backseat to, you know, like the bigger thread and where like it's what people were watching the show to begin with, right? Like they were reading the books to begin with was for the backstabbing and the head cutting. So here, you know, like for a while I thought that things were imbalanced in Chained Echoes, but it worked well in the end. So I'm sorry I doubted you, Chained Echoes. So also like one thing that I saw on Discord is that like I was talking about finishing Chained Echoes and someone was like, hey, so I just realized this whole time I thought you were talking about Sea of Stars. And that's a problem.
Yeah.
I guess you can't have two retro RPGs with somewhat generic titles battling it out at almost the same time, you know, like they can't coexist. They just get morphed into one blob into people's minds.
If you'd seen the end of Time Cop, you could have saw that coming, couldn't you?
That's true, yeah. So, yeah, neither of us managed to do a split over, you know, the kitchen counters
The beginning of Time Cop. And I mean, if you've seen both the beginning and the end of Time Cop, you are a poorer person for it.
Well, I really think that's the kind of scene where that should bookend the movie, where like we do a splits early and it's like, you know, it's just to establish he can do a splits over the counter, but at the end he does them again and that's how he saves the day.
Chekhov splits, yes.
Yeah, Chekhov splits, exactly.
Of course, this whole situation is more analogous to Time Cop 2, the Berlin Decision. But
I've not
we'll
never
get into
had the
that
pleasure of that one. I've heard the name, but
Greg's
of
what I just immediately said. Peaked. I love
Greg,
it.
Greg, this is the most awake Greg's been all day.
Yeah, exactly.
Of course, I'm bullshitting, but I have seen the Time Cop 2, the
Berlin
Decision.
You're bullshitting about that being a real movie. No.
No, no, it's true. I'm bullshitting about the situation being... I don't really remember the movie other than... what's his name? Brendan...
Brendan Fraser? Please be Brendan Fraser. Please be Brendan
Fraser. The guy who played Bruce Lee in The Dragon, the Bruce Lee story.
Jason Scott Lee.
Brendan Chung, I think, or...
Chung.
Scott Lee. Jason Scott Lee. What? That was him?
I got it on...
Who am I thinking of then?
Yeah.
Who's named Brendan? Brendan. Is it, like, literally Bruce Lee's son?
I know it. Like, I know it. Oh, yeah, Brandon Lee? Yeah, I think so.
Fuck. Okay. Well,
I'm looking.
He would have passed before Time Cop 2 came out, though.
Yeah, that makes no sense. So, yes, I'm thinking of Jason Scott Lee.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry to have doubted you, Jason
Scott Lee. I liked the moment where you said, who's named Brandon? And I'm like, I mean, I know a guy. Is that what we're talking about? Where we at now?
So do there I.
A,
I know a
there
guy
There was a
Brandon.
Dog in my orbit at one point who had that name, yeah. Which is a weird name for a dog if you think about it. You don't usually go multi-syllable names for
dogs. The one thing I will say about Time Cop 2 is that it has Robert Carradine as Jim, who is quote-unquote Big Jim.
Mm-hmm. First off, he's not that big of a guy.
Big Jim.
Secondly, Robert Carradine starred in a 2-movie series where he had a robot hand that chokes people. That's it. That's all that needs to be said.
Sure.
Oh, wow.
That was his only power, was he had a robot hand that shot off his arm and choked people.
Yeah. I mean, he was Lewis in Revenge of the Nerds, so he is not a big guy. So perhaps it's an ironic nickname.
Oh, okay. It's like when you name the big fat guy Tiny. I get it.
Right. I can only say it. Now, again, I have not seen Time Cop 2, The Berlin Decision. I have not seen it.
Or when you name Robert Carradine Breathy. Sorry.
I can only speculate.
So I guess I'm going to tag this segment here. We speak about 90s movies for a bit.
We're tagging this. You're tagging
this. We're just going to move one decade every episode. Yeah, it's fine.
You're tagging it with Time Cop 2.
We need to figure out what the shitty 2000s movie we're going to get distracted by is.
Sure. But I don't know if I can dispel the confusion around Chained Echoes and Sea of Stars without actually creating confusion or adding to the confusion. It's hard to do in podcast form, but basically I would say like Chained Echoes is to Final Fantasy-ish as Sea of Stars is to Mario RPG plus maybe Chrono Trigger. Stylistically, Chrono Trigger, gameplay-wise, Mario RPG. Anyway, Chained Echoes is the good one. This is the one that I'm recommending. Other than that, like I got to the part of Azura's Wrath where I did get to the end, except I did not.
The not real ending.
Right. Like there's a not real ending, and there's a kind of real ending where they're like, oh, actually, this is not what happened. You need to play this game again. You need to replay the last level again, and then you're going to get a different cutscene. Because, like, basically, like, I unlocked the true quote-unquote ending by getting good enough on those QTEs throughout the game. Anyway, so I played through the last mission. I had to play through the last mission again. It was not particularly phenomenal last mission, so it just felt like busy work, you know, like you could have given me the real ending without forcing me to play through this whole thing again. And I would have been pissed if that was the ending to the game I had bought, you know, like way back when for $60, right? Like they really did sell you the ending as DLC, the true ending, the true ending as DLC. So now I'm playing through the DLC chapters so I can actually get the actual ending. And I've been increasing the rate at which I'm playing through the game, and it's wearing down on me. Like it's wearing me down, rather.
Yeah, it'll do
that. It's like, yeah, like I was enjoying the anime bullshittery enough. Although I'm saying anime bullshittery, this was published by Capcom. I have it on good authority that Capcom has never animated.
Never done anime ever.
No.
Right.
Nothing.
Right. So
nothing.
I can't be. The least I guess I'm looking for a different
in the
word.
World. Yeah.
I've audited it. It's totally clean of anime. It's great.
Producers of non-anime content like the Ace Attorney series.
Sure. So I was enjoying the structure, trying very close to be an animated cartoon. trying very hard to be an anime, trying to sprint through the game really highlights how poor the gameplay is ultimately, and how not fun it can get if you try to play through it too fast, too quickly. Like, it's just too much QTEs, too much middling kind of character action bullshittery. Like, the character action bits are there just to let you build a meter that will let you start the QTE so that you can finally kill whatever big boss is there next, you know?
Right.
So, yeah, but I still enjoy it. Like, this game has style. It really does. Like, it really looks pretty. It looks phenomenal on the Series X. So, you know, I'm still happy that I'm experiencing it, and I'm just hoping that I'll get through it quickly enough so that I can put it behind me. I guess, like, one could argue, yeah, but, like, a lot of games have style and good gameplay, you know? Like, I just mentioned character action games like Bayonetta or Devil May Cry. Those play great, they're fun to play, and they've got style.
Devil May Cry, another non-anime product from Capcom.
Of course, of course. But no, like, there's still something really that I really appreciate about Azura's Wrath. Like, it's again, like, it kind of goes beyond those, you know, something like Bayonetta, where it actually tries to ape, like, the format of a TV show, and it really leans into its bullshit in a way that I feel like even something like Bayonetta dares not. So, yeah, I'm going to be finishing that, but I haven't started anything else. Like, I basically I've been buying way more games than I have been actually playing. There's been a ton of sales, and sometimes I guess I can't refuse a game for like $2-3. If it's something I've vaguely heard about.
Oh, okay. I was about to say, guess what? The eShop's got plenty for you, Kyo.
Yeah. But, like, what's funny is that, like, sometimes, yeah, it will play tricks on me because I think, like, oh, yeah, I heard about this game. And then later on, I recheck and, like, oh, because James talked about it poorly. You know, like,
game. It sucks.
Right. So, I bought and played through Astabreed.
Oh, yeah, where I basically said, like, well.
Yeah, and it's funny because, you know, I don't know. I played through it. It was a lot of anime bullshit that, I don't know, kind of, like, flew past my head because the game is all voiced in Japanese, and it gives you tiny, tiny, tiny subtitles while the screen is just shaking with explosions all over the place.
While you're, like, trying to not die.
Yeah, like, this is a shmup, you know? Like, this is, lots is happening, and, you know, sometimes I would hear, like, English words pronounced in Japanese, like, asymptote, and I'm like, what's an asymptote doing here, and why, like, I don't know, I don't have time for this bullshit.
I know, it's fine.
We are always approaching an asymptote.
Oh, okay.
The best part of that game is how it's like, we have this big important story that we're going to tell you in the least convenient times.
And it's funny because, like, as you play through the game, you unlock galleries, you know, you unlock, like, the backgrounds that you're fighting through. You unlock the character portraits, you unlock the videos. What you crucially don't unlock is the dialogue during the missions. Like, if you were to try to follow the story, you could think, like, oh, I'm just going to listen to this dialogue after the fact. I'm going to play through this mission and then unlock the dialogue that I'm going to listen to separately in the menu, in the extras. But it's, like, literally the one thing that you don't unlock.
No.
So, yeah, thanks for nothing.
It's bonkers.
But, yeah, so I played through this game, like, a few weeks ago. I don't remember how it plays. I don't, like, I just remember
it's
being...
Fine.
Yeah, I just remember being pleasantly surprised that it's finishable. You know, it's one of those shmups that actually you don't need to think too much, too hard about it. Like, this is not a one-hit kill. This is not, like, I feel like I think I one-credited my way through the game. I don't know if I actually died.
Yeah, it's not that hard. It's just kind of big explosion-y.
Yeah. It's got vaguely, maybe, Sin and Punishment-esque controls, because you do have vaguely, kind of, yeah, like, independent, like, aiming and movement, but I don't know. It's not as good as that game, of course.
No. I mean, but it's a lot cheaper.
Yeah.
Even not on sale, it's a lot cheaper.
Yeah.
It's my memory of it's a bit shit. And of course, I didn't play it on Switch. I played it on PC. Mm-hmm.
So they've updated the controls to be more Switch friendly.
Oh, that's good.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, like all the shooting, the sword. Basically, they're all on the shoulder buttons, the right shoulder buttons, the ones that are more easily accessed while you're trying to deal with movement. And the right stick is how you can lock on to enemies.
That actually makes it seem more appealing than how I played it.
Yeah, it doesn't. It's not bad. So I did enjoy the controls, and you have the option of playing so that's the arrange mode, and there's also the original mode, and I haven't even tried that. But it didn't seem to be as
tuned.
For the Switch, so I didn't even try it.
Arranged mode, for fuck's sake.
It's that sort of nomenclature that rears its head over the years. Like, I think the one that comes to my mind is Castlevania Chronicles on PlayStation. So that was a sort of port, somewhat sprucing up of the X68000 game, which was very, very difficult. And so the arranged mode was like the not as horrible mode, basically. So I think, there were certain parts that were, kind of toned down. Like, I think there's a bit on a raft or something that's really, really kind of infamous. Or it's still pretty I played the arranged mode and completed it. And it wasn't like easy, certainly, like compared to like Super Castlevania 4, which is very easy, really, because it's just, the multi-directional whipping just kind of breaks the game, because it's still not entirely, but a lot of the level design is still kind of stuck in the old paradigm. But there you have this new ability that doesn't really respect that. So it's a lot more difficult than something like that. But in that case, it was a euphemism, essentially, for, we've kind of toned it down. I don't know whether that would be true in this case as well. I played Astrobreed quite a long time ago. I don't remember very much about it, other than it was it wasn't very difficult. And it was sort of enjoyable enough, and anything about the narrative just went whoosh.
I played through it 2-3 weeks ago and I've forgotten mostly about it.
I have consumed the narrative and it's very stupid, but like not like in a fun way, more in like we've got possibly semi-magic twins controlling a mech with you and they're not getting along right now, so it's breaking the mech kind of way. I don't know. But there's nothing. You're not missing much.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, but for like a couple of bucks.
Yeah, it's fine.
It passed the time for like an hour or two, maybe. So, but yeah, no strong feelings really about it.
It looks nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There are probably better shooters.
Definitely better shooters.
Right. I'm just probably not qualified to start. Making recommendations.
It's just going to turn into keyboard reviews, has the right the right outward slope facing shooting angles.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of shooters, I'll just very quickly. There's been another IRM collection announced.
Sure.
Yeah.
Why not?
And I looked at the videos. It's got like three games. They're all three side-scrolling shooters, I believe, and. Boy, there's a reason why they're known for R-Type. That's all I say. Like, the three shooters in that collection no one's ever heard of, and no one wants to play. And I don't understand this collection at all.
And they're probably already on Arcade Archives.
I think one of those I have played on Arcade Archives, and it's
okay.
It's not bad, but it is very much in the R-Type style as well. You know, it's hardly, you know, giving you things that R-Type didn't give you. But as I recall, anyway, yeah. If I'm thinking of the same collection, because yeah, these days there's a lot of stuff out there.
This is volume 3, correct?
Yeah, I believe so.
Actually, strictly limited games versus extraordinarily limited games, or the most limited games,
sure,
has a box set called, for $159.99, you can buy IREM Collection Volumes 1 through 5 Limited Edition Bundle.
Oh, man, why would you ever want that?
So, IREM Collection 1 includes Image Fight, Image Fight 2, and X Multiply. The only one of those games I've ever heard of is X Multiply.
X Multiply, yeah.
What? I mean, Image Fight was on the NES. I'm surprised you haven't heard of that.
John, I was probably not born yet, or I was like 2.
I mostly kind of know that name from seeing it on virtual console lists. Passed me by the third game.
Now, Image Fight 2, I'm like, wow, I didn't even know that existed. More importantly, why did that exist? It's not like Image Fight was like doing gangbusters.
Volume 2 is Gunforce. Gunforce 2, you're going to notice a trend here. And Air Duel. Air Duel sounds like a fake game.
Yeah, Image Fight's from 88, so it's not like it was like some really super obscure game.
So like I said, I was 2. Air Duel sounds like an arcade game you would play in an actual video game.
More importantly, James, Image Fight is on the FM Towns.
Oh, good. So when I go back in time to Japan, I'll play it on my FM Towns. On my Marty, in my car, as I'm driving. Yes. And then the one that just got announced is IREM Collection Volume 3, Mr. Heli / Battle Chopper, depending on what region. I like that. I'm going to go ahead and guess Japan is the one that called it Mr. Heli, and the West called it Battle Chopper.
It looks kind of cute, though. It looks like maybe their answer to Fantasy Zone.
A cute 'em up?
Yeah, kind of. The little Mr. Heli does have eyes. So
in Japan, it was Mr. Heli, no Daiboken.
Okay. Mystic Riders and Dragon.
Never heard of that.
Dragon Breed.
Never heard of it.
And then collections 4 and 5 are to be announced.
Yeah, like when you said that there's going to be like a box set of 5 volumes, I was like, oh, okay. All hope is not lost, because
no.
Ultimately, the only thing I'm waiting for at this point from IREM is Ninja. What is it called? I had. Why did I move away from the page that I was on? Ninja Baseball Batman.
Oh yes, that one's actually like fun. I guess is
kind of probably not. It's probably not worth it. But
it's funny.
Yeah, it's basically a beat 'em up, you know, not unlike Ninja Turtles, the arcade game. But you've got 4 ninjas who are kind of, one is literally a baseball shaped, but the other ones are more, you know, straightforwardly, you know, looks like baseball players. And yeah, everyone swings baseball bats at baseball related enemies.
Yeah.
I don't remember the game all that well. I just remember playing through the game with 3 other friends one afternoon. It was a lot of fun, and I'd pay for that.
It's,
you know,
weird.
It's finally the spin-off game from the Warriors movie where you get to play as the baseball mimes gang.
Sure.
We were all asking for it, and IREM gave it to us.
Honestly, I was, so you're not wrong. The idea of 15 IREM games in your home, if that motivates you, seek professional assistance.
Yeah, exactly, especially when there's probably only about 1 IREM game you really ever need to play in your entire life.
And obviously that's Moon Patrol.
Can't argue.
That is actually an IREM game, even though Williams is the one who published it here.
It's really early, isn't it? It's Sakurai did it on his channel with Arino.
Oh,
this Arino from Game Center CX collaboration. Sakurai picks like 25 games from sort of the 10 years following Space Invaders, and you've got kind of that he felt were significant as like a journey from that moment of the explosion of popularity of arcade games in Japan, and Moon Patrol was one of them, and it was pretty early in the sequence, so I think it was very early 80s.
Give me Kickle Cubicle.
Oh, they did Kid Nicky Radical Ninja, right?
They did, yeah.
Okay.
So, James, did you just say give me Kickle Cubicle?
Yes.
Because you know that came out just, well, actually, like, until recently it was on sale. I had it on my Deku Deals watch for some reason. And then I remembered, oh, yeah, I don't need this game.
No one needs that game. I'm just listing IREM games I can think of.
Vigilante is also terrible.
I mean, anytime you have these like one word name for man who takes law into his own hand games from the 80s and 90s, they're probably bad.
Yeah.
Yeah,
there's not a whole lot here that I actually know in this list of IREM games.
I'm looking up Dragon Breed right now, and it just looks like a scrolling shooter where you're on a dragon.
You ride a dragon, yeah. I've seen video of it. I've no idea,
And it looks like you fight dragons. It looks like Lords of Thunder, except there's more dragons. Not except there are dragons, because there are dragons in Lords of Thunder. It just increased the dragon quota.
Yeah, I mean, it's from 1990, and if you want 1990 in a nutshell, there you go. In video games, there you are.
It increased dragons potentially at the expense of Butt Rock. So, do you take your trades?
Yeah, so, but why not once both? Again... I broach a topic saying, like, I just want to say this one thing quick, and then we spend 10 minutes on it.
This is how RFN works, Kim.
It is.
It's true.
You can't throw anything retro at us without automatically infinite, going down the rabbit hole.
It's the infinite content machine.
I'm happy just because I got to mention the FM Towns. I mean, that's
true. No, he is. I guarantee article. You. That was the highlight of Greg's day is when he started talking about the sequel to...
I've not seen it. I'm just glad that there's that I do remember that name, but if you just asked it of me, what's the subtitle to the sequel of Time Cop? I couldn't have given it to you on probably, but Guillaume knew, and that made me happy.
Yeah. I could just tell. Yeah, Greg. I mean, you could just hear it in his voice that Greg was just tickled pink.
Yes, I love it. That is that's genuine nourishment.
That's the subtitle to Time Cop 3, John. Please.
And Guillaume knew.
I had at some point a roommate who had kind of weird, not obsessions, but like decided, on a whim, like, yeah, I'm going to get these DVDs of obscure or bad movies. Yep. And the Berlin Decision just became this one thing that kind of reached mythical status despite the fact that it was pretty ordinary.
It always struck me as a very pretentious subtitle.
I'll let you know that it explores complex philosophical, questions and ethical questions, such as, like, would you kill baby Hitler?
They're really breaking.
I'm pretty sure
new thought ground there.
I know, right? Well, I feel like this movie started that question.
Oh, okay.
That's where it's from.
It's the progenitor of that question. I see.
Yeah.
No one
asked that before.
No one had ever had the thought, "What if?" Well, that was a stupid. Whatever this segment's called. You've made me forget the name of the new business segment. Here's where we're at. All right, we're going to take a break. I don't know how long this segment was. Let's find out together. It was Oh Dear God.
Yeah.
Oh Dear
God.
Wrap
it up, James. It's been great having everybody here this week.
I mean, honestly, I'm thinking about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, okay.
Let's go to bed.
Yeah, no, or play Mario in 40 minutes. I mean, that option's now available to us. We're going to be done early. So actually, you know what? You know what, audience? We're going to do something right now. We're going to do something. These guys haven't planned for it. They don't even know what I'm about to do. I'm going to surprise them because we've got a few minutes here. Gentlemen, it's time for us to start talking about the next Retroactive. Not that we're going to do it right away. Not that we're going to do it right away.
Image Fight.
Fuck you.
Dragon Breed.
Fuck you too.
Nice.
I'll take out the lot of you. So, I don't even have a plan for this one, because, of course, it's
shocking.
Well, first off, sir, I was planning on broaching this topic with y'all after the show, so I did have that much of a plan. But so here's where I'm at. It's kind of a weird time of year to do one, but we haven't done one in a long time, and I want to do one. Mm-hmm. And I think over the holidays is actually not a bad time to do one because we could record it and then release it, you know, one of the weeks we need off. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of where my head's at. So I know it's only October. I'm talking about the holidays, but you know how schedules get. We've been doing the show a long time. Things get weird starting like the week before U.S. Thanksgiving. And then they don't stop being weird until early January. So I wanted to give us time to get through it. So what I want from the audience is I don't have kind of a focus space here. But I want it to be something that's broadly available. So what I'm going to say is, if it's on the Nintendo Switch Online and I'm willing to include the expansion pack service, that's a big bonus, but it doesn't have to be. But what I would like it to be is a game that is available on Switch in some form or another. So it can be an Arcade Archives release. It can be in like a bundle of games from another series. As long as that bundle doesn't like cost like $40, you know, if it's like part of a $15 bundle of three or four games, sure, whatever. Great. Fine. Go ahead and pick out your like suggestion for a retro game that is available on Switch that I can acquire for less than $20. And that, if it's part of a bundle, if it's individually and it's $20, I ain't picking it. F that. I don't know what we're going to do with that list. I don't know if we're going to devote or if we're just going to debate it out here, but go ahead and send us that list. We're probably going to talk about it sometime late in December, but we might actually record it way in advance of that and just have it in the can. I don't know yet. We'll figure it out. But
I would tell people, don't just say the game. Maybe try to sell it to us a little bit. Tell us why it would be a good discussion. Because, I mean, like you mentioned, the Arcade Archive games. I was actually wondering, like, could we ever do an arcade game at some point?
I think we could. Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
It'd probably only be a one segment one, but yeah, we could.
Right. But there are also, you know, like there's a lot of variety in the retro offerings on Switch. Like there's even like the Blade Runner PC, you know, point and click adventure came out. Like maybe don't pick that one because apparently the port is pretty bad, but like there's more than just pixel art out there.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be like an old NES game either. Like it can be something like it's just our criteria has always been it needs to be available on a Nintendo system, and we had plenty of games that had not previously been on Nintendo systems until they were on the Virtual Console become retroactives. That's fine. Give us an explanation of why, because we might not even know this game, or we might only know about it in passing. Like, John and I know a lot about the FM Towns, but that's only because we encountered it in passing and thought the idea that a console was named Marty was very stupid.
Yeah.
And that's how we got there. Now, we know why it's named Marty, because Back to the Future was a big fucking movie. And it probably really is that simple. But, send us a game. Tell us if it's in a collection, tell us the name of the collection, or tell us how to get to it on Switch. It's probably the best way to handle it. You can say, hey, it's part of the blank collection, or it's on the service, whatever. And give us, you know, what the game is and why we should play it or why we should be interested in it. I don't need like five paragraphs. A couple sentences will do. And again, just send that to us. I'll give you a couple weeks to get that in, and then we'll figure out which one it's going to be, and people can play it. And like I said, we'll probably record it in early December, and you'll probably hear it later. But yeah, that's something that I want to get started on, so we have it to go. Like always, emails, you can send them to, and these suggestions, to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. That is rfn@nintendoworldreport.com.
Radio Foxtrot Nintendo at nintendoworldreport.com.
He's going to do that every week.
It's military jargon. I just enjoy it. What can I say?
Dear God. All right. This episode is kill. So, Greg, what is our music to close the show out?
Well, I felt like I had to go with something Mario related. I guess, you know, there was a few different ways you could go with that. I chose sort of the most recent kind of point of where we left off with the series, not being, you know, Super Mario Maker 2, not being New Super Mario Brothers U Deluxe or anything, but Bowser's Fury. Which, of course, launched a couple of years ago as part of the 3D World kind of port to Switch. And it's very nice music. We've not used it before. So the particular track here is Scampershaws, which just like this, like, you know, quite a lot of it, really. It's a really quite a high degree of continuity with the 3D World soundtrack. Now, I mean, a lot of the game isn't necessarily that much continuity with 3D World. You know, structurally, it's quite different. It's a little bit of a different take on a 3D Mario, you know, more open, more of a kind of, a little bit like the earlier kind of 3D Marios, you know, like 64 and Sunshine, but on, you know, on a scale where you're not having to, like, go in and out of a hub and going into particular instances. It's just kind of all there to be found. So it's a little bit odd in terms of, like, oh, you know, in that sense, it's quite different. But in another sense, you know, we're going to lean even harder into the cat thing. And, you know, the music's going to be really similar, but that is no bad thing because 3D World had wonderful music. You know, really fun, jazzy instrumentation, you know, just kind of, you know, the 3D games took on, you know, I guess starting with Galaxy, a much more kind of rich instrument kind of focus than the 2D games would have from that point on, you know, and this kind of maintains that disparity. It's just really, really nice sounding, and it already, even just playing a little bit of it, you know, Super Mario Bros. Wonder is much more in the new Super Mario tradition. You know, it's not using necessarily the same melodies or all that, but you could tell it's just like not going so much for that kind of big, rich sound that the 3D ones did.
Cool. All right. Well, on that, enjoy Super Mario Brunder, and we'll see you next week. Bye, everybody.
Later.
Bye.
Bye-bye.